Game Bros.
Hello, listeners.
Hey.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And that snappy introduction lets you know that we are recording live in the same room.
Live.
Rather than having the same same latency that we do when we record over Discord.
Yeah.
So here we are in person with each other, not with you, of course.
Yeah.
And it's the first episode of the new year.
2019.
Check it out. And so today is a regularly scheduled episode where we are going to talk about one specific board game. We're going to talk about the gameplay, the strategies, and the design. So, Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
We are talking about Bunny Kingdom, designed by Richard Garfield and published by ELO Games in 2017.
All right, Bunny Kingdom. So, fun fact about Bunny Kingdom, our mom wanted this for Christmas, and she got it.
It's a fun fact.
That's a fun fact indeed. So, Bunny Kingdom, to give a short description of what the game is about, in Bunny Kingdom, each player leads a faction of bunnies attempting to settle in a territory divided into a 10x10 grid. Each round, players are dealt 10 to 12 cards, and on each turn, players draft two cards from their hand and pass the rest to the next player. Cards that can be drafted are territory coordinates, which players immediately claim with their bunnies, structures, which players later place on their claimed territories, and scrolls, which are kept hidden and earn bonus points at the end of the game. At the end of each round, players score points from each of their fiefs, a fief being a series of connected territories whose point values come from multiplying the number of unique resources in the fief by the number of towers from cities in the fief. After four rounds of drafting, constructing, and scoring, plus adding the points from drafted scrolls, the player with the most points wins. And that is the general gist of Bunny Kingdom.
Yep.
So let's get a little more specific about the gameplay.
Right.
So there is there's a map, 10x10 grid. Mm-hmm. It's the same map every time. It's not a modular map. And it has all these different kinds of territories on it. The ones in the base game, or in the game are that you start with. There's mountains. There's forests, which provide the wood resource. There's oceans, which provide the fish resource. There's farms, which provide the carrot resource. Those are the three basic resources, wood, farms, wood, carrots, and fish.
Yeah.
And then there are towns on the map that have a single towered town inside them. And then there's blank spaces, which are just fields that don't provide any resources.
There's grass.
And each space has a coordinate. They go 1 to 10 along the side, I believe. Hold on.
Yeah.
Let's actually double check. Since we have the map right here.
I believe it's 1 to 10 across the top and bottom.
Yes, 1 to 10 across the top and bottom, and A to H.
A to J.
A to J, my mistake.
Vertically.
Along the, along the top and bottom, 1 to 10, along the sides, A to J. So, each space is assigned a coordinate, and then there's a giant stack, a deck of cards that has all these different types of cards in it. And you deal from that stack to every player 10 to 12 cards. It's 12 cards in a three-player game, 10 cards in a four-player game.
Or a two-player game.
The two-player game is kind of like a variant rule. It's different because you're dealt two hands, I think. Or it's one. You're dealt two hands. You keep one hand. We won't get into it. It's a little complicated. We'll just stick to the three- and four-player discussion. So you're dealt 10 to 12 cards. And on your turn, you pick two of those cards, which you aim to play, and then pass the rest. On the first round, it's to your left. Then it goes right, left, right for the next three rounds. And after you pass the cards, before you pick up the next hand and draft those cards, you reveal the cards if they were anything but a scroll. If they're a scroll, you don't reveal it. You just keep it to the side, face down. But anything else, you reveal at that point. And if it's a coordinate, you get to place your little bunny tokens on the spaces that you have just claimed. If it's a structure, then you get to pick up the structure from the supply and keep it handy for the next part after you've drafted all the cards for this round. And then if it's, like I said, a scroll, you keep it secret. So then you pass, you pick up the next hand. Now you have two fewer cards to draft from this hand coming from the other player. And this goes until all the cards run out. After the cards run out of the hands, you build structures. And you can only build a structure in a space that doesn't have a structure in it already. And structures are basically just these extra pieces that you can add to spaces. So the board starts with some structures on it. All of the villages on the board have a little village structure piece that rests on it that has a single tower. And but all the spaces that provide resources, they don't have anything built on them. The resources are just flat on the board. So you can add structures to those. So just to describe some of the different kinds of structures you can get in this game. You can get more cities or more towns that have a single tower. You can also get towns that have two or three towers in them.
So the three towers, it must be noted, they can only be built on mountains.
Yeah, they have a prerequisite. You can get camps, which are kind of like temporary spaces. When you get to build structures, camps will allow you to take coordinate spaces that you haven't already claimed yet. However, they can be taken away from you if somebody else were to draft that coordinate space later on in the game.
Right, you squat on an empty space.
Yeah, those are camps. You can get farms, which will provide the same basic resources, but they can be placed on any empty space. You can get trading posts. Trading posts, which will allow you to play. It's kind of like a wild card for the three basic resources. You can get
luxury resources,
which each luxury resource has a special, it has a prerequisite. It can only be placed on one type of territory. Most of them go in the mountains, but there is one for the ocean, one for the farms, and one for the woods. And luxury resources are different from the basic resources. So when it comes to scoring, they are very useful, and we'll get to exactly how scoring is done in a little bit, but it's pretty simple. Yeah. There are sky towers, which will allow you to link two disconnected fiefs, because in order to score a fief, it needs to be adjacent to other territories you control. So sky towers just link fiefs from across the map. They don't have to be adjacent to count for each other.
Right.
And then I believe that's it for structures
that
you can add to the board.
So for scoring.
Two more cards.
Oh, sure, yeah.
There's scrolls. There's a subtype of a scroll called treasure that's just worth flat points. Every other scroll will give you a number of points at the end of the game based on some kind of thing that you achieved in your fiefs and your drafting. And then there's also provisions cards, which are just a special card where when you play them, you get to play the top two cards of the deck instead, And those two cards could be anything. They could be another provisions card. They could be territory coordinates, structures, whatever. You just play them. If they're scrolls, you keep them secret.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's all the kinds of cards that you can get that you will draft over this game. So, after all the cards are drafted, you go to scoring. And for scoring, yes?
Well, technically, you build structures
draft. After you draft, you build structures. So you build them on whatever open spaces you have available to you. You don't have to build everything.
Right.
If you have the sky tower, but you don't really have two fiefs that you want to connect at the moment, you can wait. It's perfectly reasonable as far as strategies go to wait until you're getting the most value out of something.
Oh, yeah.
And then after you build structures, yes, you go to scoring. Okay. So to score, you look at each of your fiefs. And again, a fief is connected territories that are connected by the flat sides of the spaces, not the corners.
Right.
And then you count in each fief the number of unique resources. At the start of the game, there's only three on the board. And then you can get more unique resources as you add luxury resources to your fiefs. And you multiply that by the number of towers in cities in your fief. So the basic cities that start on the board have one tower. And then again, there's other structures that can have two or three towers. So you just count each individual tower in those cities and you multiply that by the number of unique resources. And then you get the score for the fief. And then you add that to your total score. There's a little score tracker off to the side of the board where you keep track of your points throughout the game. And you do this four times. And then at the end of the game, you show your scroll cards and you add those points to your total and then you see who won.
Yeah,
so exactly. That's the detailed version of how you play Bunny Kingdom. Mm-hmm. So now let's get into the strategies in Bunny Kingdom.
Right.
So So we had a good discussion of this the last time we played, because something interesting happened, and that was I tried a new strategy that none of us had really ever gone for. Usually when we play Bunny Kingdom, where we're always just kind of we're spreading out our pieces on the board. We get a lot of coordinate cards early most of the time, and then we try to connect them up to make big fiefs. That's how we've usually played this game every time we've played it. This time around, I tried a strategy where I drafted a whole bunch of scroll cards at the beginning of the game, and then I tried to draft coordinate cards that helped earn points towards those scroll cards, not so much points for being fiefs on the board. And until the end of the game, before we scored the scroll cards, I was in last place, and then we went to scoring, and then I jumped all the way up to first place. And it was very surprising that happened. I didn't think it was going to happen.
I don't think any of us did.
I was, in fact, whining and complaining throughout the game because one of the scroll cards I had involved putting pieces on the edge of the board. And it gave me bonus points for that. And putting pieces on the edge of the board, as far as this whole drafting territories and placing pieces thing goes, is not ideal because there's not many potential places for your pieces to go from there. And pretty soon, around like halfway through the game, it was obvious that my pieces on the edge of the board were going nowhere because there was a bunch of opponents' pieces that had drafted the territories around them and blocked them off to the point where they were probably not going to earn very many points. So I was in last place and I had very little potential to expand. And still at the end of the game, I jumped all the way up to first just because I had all these scroll cards that I was secretly drafting around.
Yeah, I think this kind of revealed to us, or at least revealed to me, a new side of the game.
Yeah, it made us, it made us do the math, which we hadn't actually done until then. And then it revealed to us exactly what the real strategies in this game are.
Yeah, so let's dive into those then.
Yeah, we have in fact devised a step-by-step process that you should follow in order to achieve the most points.
Right.
It's mathematically devised, not proven, I guess.
Mathematically based.
It
has a foundation.
It has foundations in mathematics. Okay, so the first thing you should do, Matthew, what is the first thing you should do when you start playing this game?
Look at your hand.
Look at your hand. Very good. Mathematically, we have proven that if you don't look at your hand, you will lose at this game.
There's a reason why I said this, which is because I think early game, if your hand has a good build around parchment, you want to get that.
Yes. Early in the game, you want to get the build around parchments. So those
being... I made a list of a couple.
Yeah.
There's the kings of each resource.
Right.
There is the bungee... which wants fiefs without cities.
Okay.
I think there is the little prince
who
wants a lot of low scoring or moderately scoring fiefs. There is the barbarian who I think wants
10 unique, 10 different fiefs.
Yeah. There is
the bunbarian, mean.
And then there's the one that gives you points for being on the edge of the board.
Yes.
I think those are the main build arounds.
Right. So and then there's also, so the kings are the ones that want you to have 7 of a resource, right? There's also the ones that give you 2 points for each individual resource, which I think could also count as a build around.
So, yeah. One of those is
I think those are
kings.
Like mongers
or something.
There's
another cycle that's similar.
Right. They'll give you like.
Both of those work in tandem.
Right. So, yes, you, especially the wood and the fish ones, because those are on the edge of the board and they're easily combined with the edge of the board one.
Yeah.
But yes, you should look for these build around scrolls early on in the game, because what we found is that when you are scoring a fief, any particular tower, how did you put it? It's worth like three points at the most, on average, because unless you have luxury resources, your potential is to only connect to the 3 basic resources. And so getting something that per turn is going to be worth more than 3 points, or per round is going to be worth more than 3 points, that's better than making towers, which are only worth 3 points a round.
Though I was going to say, I think the next step is to reach that 3-point limit early right. on.
I would, before we go on to step two, I'd like to add in that as part of step one, you should look for those build around scrolls.
Yeah.
And then while you're at it, because you get plenty of actions in round one, you can get those scrolls and then have excess turns to do whatever you want. So with that, whatever you want, I suggest that you, I mean, if you can't start building around those scrolls because you're not getting past enough territories that work towards finishing that scroll, then you want to start to plan out territories in the center of the map that you can easily build into a decent fight fief.
Right. Yeah. When you were mentioning earlier that like it's hard to build out your territories from the edge,
mm-hmm.
it's literally just because there's, you know, if you can either go up, down, or inward, you can't. You're missing an entire fourth direction to build from.
Yeah.
And then if you go up or down, those also can only go up, down, or inward.
And whether or not you can build a fief out is all entirely dependent on
the cards you get past.
Yeah, the cards you get past. So if you have more chances to get past a card because there's four territories you can potentially have access to rather than
exactly.
just three, then yeah. So now I've looked at the board. And based on this idea that you essentially just want to connect to all three basic resources as fast as you can after you have built a fief, then the there's three specific spaces that are very useful to settle around in the center of the board.
Right.
Because of their proximity to the three basic resources. So just to give a general location, the area around C3, the area around B7 and the area around H4, G4, or in those areas is where you want to be looking for closest.
Right.
Because if you're settled on those spaces or near those spaces, you are going to be very close to all three basic resources and also some mountains, which can be very useful for right. luxury resources and,
mountains large have the cities. Most luxury resources requirement
by far. Now, of all those spaces, the best one is the area around B7. Like, if you can get B7 or C7, those two spaces are very useful to start from because you are closest to all three resources from there. It only takes four territories to connect all three resources plus a city, versus the other spaces which cost five at the minimum. Plus, you are next to three mountains and very close to a fourth.
Right, and very close to a second city.
Yes, so it's very good to settle just around there if you have the opportunity. Take those spaces first, and then later on in the game you'll have the advantage of expanding outwards to some very close by resources.
Right.
So yeah, so to go back to our list of our step-by-step plan, step one, get a build-around scroll and get a fief started near the center of the board in those three areas. Step two is start to connect all three basic resources to your main fief, and while you're at it, also keep building towards that scroll that you have. Essentially, I think for the rest of this, you should keep in mind that if you have no other options available to you, then build towards your scrolls.
Right.
And if you don't have that available to you, then build up your fief.
Right. And building up your fief doesn't always mean get more land.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably better to get luxury resources and cities whenever possible.
Yeah.
Because those are flat point increases.
Right.
Or not flat, but they're point boosts.
Yeah. When I was playing the game that I won, when I wasn't building towards my build around scrolls and I didn't actually ever get the fief in the center of the board that I could build towards, I was just collecting cities with two or more towers.
Right.
Because I knew those could probably be useful eventually in the game, even if I didn't have a good fief to put them in early.
Right.
Later on, they'd be worth some points. So that's what I was kind of doing in my spare time, was I was picking up those cities. So step one, we just went over that. Step two, get to all three basic resources. Step three, after you have all three basic resources, then it's imperative that you get a luxury resource into your big fief.
Right.
Because if you can't get that, then all of the cities and towers and extra territory that you add to your fief won't be worth
more than three.
More than three. And then therefore all, like a lot of scrolls will be worth more than that. But it's about getting your fief to be worth more than the scrolls.
Right.
So you start adding luxury resources. As soon as you get at least one in there, then you have four resources, which will surpass most scroll cards. Mm-hmm. And then any more is just even better.
I will say that, so if a scroll, so a lot of like treasures, for instance, are at most worth 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe on average, that's what you would expect. And to be fair, if you have a fief with 3 resources and 1 tower for 2 rounds, that's 6 points.
Yes.
Right. So what I'm saying is, like, while early they're the better, it's not the end of the world if you don't get that luxury resource round one.
Yeah, maybe we should clarify that.
Round two, maybe 2.5, so like halfway through round two is where I would say start looking for luxury resources.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think really the idea is that look for the build around scrolls,
right,
early,
yeah.
And then the treasure scrolls are really only good in the last round.
Right.
Avoid treasure scrolls.
There is a bunny that doubles your points from treasure scrolls.
A scroll that does that, yeah.
Yeah, there's a scroll that does that.
Yeah, I mean, but you have to consider each treasure scroll,
right,
as being only worth, you know, maybe you could just consider it like take however many points you're going to get at the end of the game and then divide that across the 4 rounds,
yeah,
and then compare that to however much you're going to be getting from cities.
Exactly.
And you want to take the action that just gives you the most. So anyways, connect to the 3 basic resources, get luxury resources, then just get towers into there. Because once you have more than 4, once you have 4 or more different unique resources in a fief, towers are worth a whole lot more to you. So the sooner the better, and then later on just pile them in. Just get a bunch of towers and make that fief worth a whole bunch of points.
Yeah.
All the while building towards those scrolls that you had. Because again, you have to do that in order for them to be worth the investment that you had at the beginning of the game. And that's it.
Exactly.
You can you could probably just boil it down to 2 steps, and that is get build around scrolls early in the game, and then build up your fief later in the game while continuing to build around the scroll.
I wanted to ask your opinion on in terms of strategy,
okay,
which is the provisions, the draw 2 cards and play them.
Yeah.
How does that slot in? Are they good, bad?
I think
medium.
Overall, they're subpar.
Yeah.
Because the most common kind of card in the deck is a territory card. And so you're most likely to draw 1 or 2 territory cards with provisions. And because you didn't pick them, they're most likely just going to be at random parts of the board.
The board's too big in order to get any like guarantee out of provisions.
Yeah. And too cramped for any provision later in the game to have potential to expand to something intentional.
To matter.
So I rate them subpar. You I would only take them if all the territories don't either build towards a scroll that you picked or they don't add to your fief and all the structures. If it's just like 1 tower cities. Or maybe even camps. If you don't have a good use for a camp, then a provision would be better than that.
Yeah, it's a last resort.
Yeah, it's a last resort. It's better than, I mean, it's better than stuff you don't need.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and it's better than 1 tower cities, I think, in general. I'd put those below provisions. Unless you have a really good, well, the thing with 1 tower cities is that they take up a whole space that you'd rather have a 2 tower city in.
Right,
or
sure.
A sky tower that connects your fief to another one.
There's quite a few more 1 towers than 2 towers.
Yeah. I happen to have a decent chunk of 2 towers in our game we played. I think it's not unreasonable to just take provisions over a 1 tower.
Okay
So I think that's about all we have for strategies, other than that sort of basic rubric we just designed. You can kind of just you kind of have to feel it out for yourself, because it is a draft game. So you have to, you know, make decisions in each draft hand, with either the assumption that you might get something better in the same hand or later in the game from the draft, or maybe even the assumption that you might pass a certain card around.
Right. Though it is worth noting that in a 4-player game, you are only going to get 2 of the cards you pass back.
Right.
And in 3 players... you're given 12, so you actually have a bit more leeway with 3 players.
Right. There's a better chance to table some stuff in a 3-player game than in a 4-player game.
Exactly.
Yeah, in a 4-player game, it's very unlikely that you'll get what you want from your opening hand. But there's a chance.
There's a chance, yeah.
Okay.
So, design.
Design. Let's get into the design of the game. So, one thing that I like about this game is that all of the actions in the game are dictated through drafting.
Right, yeah.
So, I've played way too many games with a menu of actions that you have to keep in mind for every turn. Games with card components that have a menu of actions.
Yeah, or like even Seasons.
Yeah. You know,
that's a drafting game that has this whole other action phase.
Yeah, which can just be a lot to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to... Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. It's just a lot to keep in mind.
Drafting games can especially demand a lot of mental space because of the draft, like the inherent properties.
Mm-hmm.
Things like how you're passing certain cards and you have to think about what others might pick. It's like both an engine building game and a deduction game.
Yeah, you have to continually process like your like made up probabilities of whether you'll get something you need later on.
Yeah.
So just taking all the mental space that you would have to dictate to an action menu out of that and just make it just one rule. You just draft the cards and then the cards will be your actions.
Yeah.
It greatly simplifies. Yeah, unless that's the case, you don't want multiples of the same kind, because it's just a waste of turns.
Exactly.
Because, like we said, the scoring is based on unique resources in a fief.
But calling them resources, framing them as such, it just kind of betrays your instincts.
Right. Now, I mean, it tells you in the rule book that you shouldn't, that you need to get unique resources, right, because that's how the game functions.
Right.
And the way that the board is designed, the way that it's laid out, any resource is going to be very close, you know, within one or two spaces of itself. So a lot of the wood is next to other wood. A lot of the carrots are nearby other carrots. A lot of the fish is right next to other fish. All the fish is right next to other fish, especially. And what this does from a gameplay perspective in a teaching moment is it exposes you to this fact that you cannot score multiple points from the same resource very on if you are just connecting pieces of territory in your fiefs.
Right.
After the first round of scoring, you will realize, oh yeah, of course, it doesn't give me more points, even though I have all those wood pieces on the edge of the board.
Right. I do want to mention a feels bad moment that I had when we played our most recent game. Was I had two territories towards the right side of the board. One fief was sort of in the upper part and it had all three resources. One fief was in the bottom part and it had all two had two of the three. And I was working really hard to get that second one on the bottom to have three resources. And then I just get passed in like round three or four a territory that would connect the two fiefs. And it felt bad because I put all this effort into getting cards for that bottom one that ended up being worthless because I connected the cities anyways.
Right, because when you connect them, it doesn't matter that you had three unique and two different fiefs.
But I couldn't see that coming because I hadn't seen that hand of cards for two rounds at that point, you know.
If you hadn't spent so much time, then it would have been, it would have given you the chance to connect to get all three resources to all those towers in the other fief.
Right.
But
I could have drafted cards for like parchments or towers that I got other resources instead.
Yeah, but it was unfortunately wasted effort in that case. And that kind of wasted effort can sometimes come with drafting games when you're just not past the stuff that you need.
Yeah.
And you kind of just tunnel on something that doesn't pay off in the end.
Right.
I guess it's especially unfortunate here is because it dangles like a literal carrot in front of you.
Yeah. It's sort of like if you have these two things, then I guess you either abandon one or you try to make both of them work because, like, you know, you invested some amount of cards.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a false, whatever it's called when, like, what the sunk cost fallacy. That's what it is. Maybe it's that. But I think it's hard to say that, like, if you're playing the game right and then you get dealt a new hand that makes it so your work was kind of made moot. It feels weird. Yeah.
Another part of the design is it's interesting that scrolls are even worth as much as they are. When we played, I was whining about how I didn't think I was going to win.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the game, I surged ahead to first place and I had no idea that I was going to win. I didn't know I was going to win until I finished scoring the final scroll and it pushed me ahead of everyone else by a large margin. So it's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate design thing that the scrolls are worth so little. I get that they should be.
But you mean they're worth so much?
I mean they're worth so much.
Yeah.
I get that they should be a competitive cost because like everything else in the game goes towards building these fiefs. So when you're not building a fief, it should be worth your time. And in this game, it is worth your time, and probably even more so than building the fief. But it's just that, all the excitement for the entire game, for 8/10 of the game, for 80%, 90% of the game comes from building your fief and then scoring points from it.
And like when you set up, you know, you lay the board out and it takes up all this real estate and you put some towers down and people start to put their bunnies down. Like it feels good to do stuff on the board and like build up the board.
Yeah. Although the cards, the scrolls themselves, a lot of the times ask you to do things on the board. So by playing into them, it's not that you're doing nothing. It's just that most of the scroll cards, in fact, don't involve making one big powerful fief.
Right.
There's only one that really cares about the strength of your fiefs, and the strength is the score that they give you. Only one of them cares about the scores of your fiefs, and that one wants you to build multiple moderately powerful fiefs rather than one really big one, because it gives you it, what it lets you do is it lets you score all of your fiefs an additional time at the end of the game minus the largest scoring fief.
Yeah.
So it's better to spend all your turns with that scroll building up multiple scoring
fiefs. I guess what I should say is, like, the game doesn't make it apparent that the scrolls are worth building around from the start, because, like, it shows you, like, before you play the game, you set up part of the board and put stuff on the board, and then it can kind of easily distract you and be like, oh, I want to build up the board too. You know, I want to race to get land with my teammate or with my enemies, even though, you know, you could be passed a really good scroll. For a new player, they're probably already focused on building up the board because they see other people doing it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to do a lot. You have to focus a lot on what your scrolls do in order for them to be worth as many points as they are at the end of the game. So yeah, and then that they're going to be worth so much at the end of the game is not apparent. Just from looking at them and reading them. So that's kind of an unfortunate kind of schism that happens in this game, where the scrolls are worth more, but they're less exciting to play.
Unless you're like a very cerebral planning ahead type of person, I guess.
Yeah. If you do the math like we did, but on the first playthrough, then you might get kind of excited from the scrolls.
Yeah. It feels sometimes to me, it feels like, well, what were all those earlier games? You know, we played this like 5 or 6 times.
I know. And when we played them, the scrolls would always be like the last thing you pick. I think the first time I played, I picked like a fish scroll that gave you like 2 points for each fish. But then the rest of that game, I didn't get past many fish territories to claim. And I mean, by the time I was past some of them, I was much more focused on bolstering the powers of all my fiefs. If I just realized that actually just collecting all the fish scrolls and then actually tunneling on all those fish cards and then kind of building my fiefs on the side was actually going to be worth more points in the end. You know, I hadn't realized it at the time. I didn't realize it until this last playthrough. Which is now like 8 months after we played for the first time. So that's an interesting thing. That's a weird thing about this game, that the scrolls are,
deceptively powerful.
I mean, they have to be, because they don't they're the weird thing. It's like the alternative strategy in another game that probably doesn't pay off. In this game, it does pay off. You just have to kind of try it out to figure it out. Maybe that's a good thing, that you have to try it out to realize that. You know, if I hadn't taken a risk and gone with this interesting strategy in this game, then we wouldn't have found out that the scrolls are actually really good.
See, this is a part where personally I'm split, because, like, one of my favorite games, Dominion, is a game where if you're in a vacuum and you don't read anything or listen to any strategy, like, you do have to try out, you know, things and new ideas to find the good strategy, even if it doesn't seem good.
Right, but, I mean, Dominion, the game itself, if you're in a vacuum, you can see how you have all these different tools to tinker with. In this game, it's just like an alternate route. There's two routes, and this is just one of those two routes, and you just have to take a risk on doing it. There's nothing that tells you to try it out, to mix it in with your other ideas, like in Dominion. There's nothing that implies that it's going to be worth a lot of points, except for the ones that flat out say it's worth like 20 points if you get 7 fish. And always in Dominion, you see everything available to you at the beginning. In this game, you might not even see the cards that are worth 20 points for the whole game. You might not even see them for 2 whole games. Because it's just a big shuffled deck that you're drafting from. One last design note I have about this game is that there's an unfortunate lack of text on the cards. I think, like, especially cards that have prerequisites, cards that are treasures, they don't say everything that they could say or that they probably should say, especially when you're playing with a new group of people. Very often I've played games with played games of Bunny Kingdom with new people, and they've made incorrect assumptions where they can place their luxury resources, where they can place their towns. They have a little icon that says, like, this is where the territories go. But you would really only know that if you read the rule book, and
right.
in most games, the rule book should make sense to the people playing it for the first time. But, you know, when someone who's familiar with the game plays it with a new group, they probably aren't going to read the rule book word for word.
Yeah.
And they might skip over that small fact. So having right. a little reminder on the cards could be yeah. very useful in the in a game
then,
like this.
Like, it's easy to miss over. If somebody says, like, you know, you can put your three size cities only on mountains.
Yeah.
You might forget about that because it's been a while since they explained the rules and your eyes just passed over the little mountain symbol.
Yeah, they passed over that and they just saw the big three.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, oh yeah, big three, take that.
Yeah.
And then you don't and then you get mountains. It. Yeah, and then you don't have any mountains and it feels bad, man.
Yeah. I think also this is one where like the stuff that wants to be complex has too much room. So like the big example that I'm trying to get to is the parchments that copy a parchment from the player to your left
mm-hmm.
or your right.
Have we been calling them scrolls or part? I think
the they're supposed to be called parchments.
Parchment is the correct term.
I've been we calling them parchments.
I've been calling them scrolls.
I know. I didn't want to call you out.
Oh, okay. Well, you get what we mean. Parchments yeah. then.
So there's two of these.
At least copy, I've been calling it Fief this whole yeah, time.
One copies one from Fife. The player to your left. One copies one from the player to your right.
Yeah.
And I think these always have problems because it's like, does it copy the points they got or just the text of the card?
Yeah.
You know, or like there's the left and right glove that care about having the other one to give you the most points. If I copy the left glove, does it count as giving 4 points because I'm copying it when the person to my left has the right glove?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It's yeah.
Like these card interactions that do have text are still pretty vague.
Right. I mean, when you have a game with cards, the cards kind of need to tell you everything that yeah. the card does. It like it,
the card should explain what it does.
I mean,
exactly. rules manager.
I mean, yeah, it's like, yeah, if you have a card, it should say what it does. In any, when you're designing any card-based game, you should have someone be able to understand what a card does by reading it. And when there's no text on the cards at all,
right.
it's especially difficult to understand exactly what a card does.
Exactly.
Now, I mean, I can understand leaving the text off of coordinate cards because that's simple enough that you just kind of get it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the same thing with structures. Although even there, when I play with a new group of players, they'll like pick a structure card and then they'll immediately, I hear it from every player. They'll say, so do I put this out now? Or, and then I have to say, no, we're going to have a portion where we build structures after we're done drafting.
Yeah.
So just hold on to it for now. So yeah, just including just a little bit of reminder text would be helpful in a game like this. It's a little too vague.
Right. And even with structures, it's like, to be fair, you put your bunnies down on your territories the moment you play those cards.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of weird in that regard that there is technically two different timings for putting stuff on the board.
Right, right. That's about all the notes I have. Do you have any notes yourself?
Not really anymore. We read through all of mine.
All right, very cool. So that's then I guess that's our episode on Bunny Kingdom.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
If you like, you can leave a comment, rate, subscribe to us on any podcasting platform. You can find all of our episodes categorized with tags on our website, bgbcast.com.
Yeah, there you go.
We talked about Dominion, and I don't think we've done a King Domino episode yet, but
I don't think so. But
we haven't mentioned that. I think we mentioned it in a Good Stuffs or something.
Yeah.
But you can check out the Dominion game. You can check out this. I think we mentioned Seasons in our card drafting. You can listen to our card drafting episode.
Oh yeah, we did a whole episode on that.
On the mechanic that might give you some more insight into this game and some places to go for other card drafting games. Speaking of which, what other card drafting games would you? I guess
I was gonna say this isn't a drafting game, but Terraforming Mars.
Okay, yeah,
it's an area control game with a card management aspect.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to call it a card drafting game, but I mean, it works.
It's territory management.
Yeah.
Similar. It has that in common with Bunny Kingdom. Mm-hmm. It also has in common that when you control a territory, you put a little token on top of it that shows that you control it.
Oh, yeah.
And then you want to expand. I mean, you have to expand from territories you control in that game.
Pretty much.
Let's see.
Well, I mean, there's always Seven Wonders.
Yeah, there's Seven Wonders as far as drafting goes. And then I was going to also suggest, suggest Clank. And that's it's kind of a hybrid, another hybrid game where it's instead of a card drafting territory control game, it's a deck building adventure game.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are our recommendations, and you can find episodes where we talked about those on our website. You can follow us on social media, where we post our thoughts and have discussions. That's BG Bros Cast on Facebook and Twitter. Mm-hmm. I think that's about...
Did you mention our merch?
Oh, hey, you can check out our merch at tpublic.com/users/BG Bros Cast.
Yeah, you can also
find... Sorry, BGB Cast.
You can also find a link to that on our website as well.
Yeah. So go to bgbcast.com for the link to take you directly there.
If you don't have a type of apparel that you'd want to buy, let us know through like Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, hit
us
up. We'd
love to hear what other, you know, type of shirts and whatnots we can, you know, put up there.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I have my own plug.
Matt plugs.
Yeah, so one thing, I am starting to write articles on the BGBcast website. I have one out right now that is pretty much my... favorite video games I've played of 2018, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
It's me talking about video games I played in 2018 that released in 2018. Sort of not quite game of the year, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, in that regard, I stream on twitch.tv/twack, twitch.tv/twak, and I stream on weekdays from about 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Central Time. And I streamed this week, I streamed Katamari, the remake of Katamari. Next week, I'm planning on starting Hollow Knight, so that'll be fun.
All right. So check out that stream. You could also join his Discord.
Yep.
I'm on that Discord from time to time, chatting a little bit, so you can discuss some stuff with us there as well. And with that, that is the end of our episode. So thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much.
And stay tuned for the rest of 2019, when we discuss other very cool board games and board game discussions and other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
All right, peace out.